clean contact.
I hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and with me are Peter Donahue and Jansen Mizurek. Happy Thursday, guys.
Thank you, Andy. It's nice to be here again.
Hi, guys. What's going on?
I'm realizing we should stop saying what day of the week it is because these don't come out on the same days, but that's okay.
Live and learn.
Yeah, live and learn. Thank you. That's what, you know, it's a great segue because we're talking today about the beginner's mind and four types of students. You can always be learning something. This is kind of a concept the three of us were just sitting around talking about, and so we figured we might as well get this on tape or on, I don't know what you, it's not on tape. It's
yeah, on the vinyl.
No, it's not on vinyl.
Oops, right.
On the interwebs.
Child of the 60s.
On a digital file somewhere. So, yeah, we're talking about the beginner's mind. It's an idea that came from a book called Zen Golf by Dr. Joseph Parent. This is a guy I've been listening to. He's good friends with Eric Anders Lang from Adventures in Golf, and he's been on his podcast a few times, and so I listened to that. Then I started reading his book, and now we're doing our own podcast about it. So, Pete, would you kick us off with some beginner's mind?
Yes. I'm so glad you brought this back because you asked me if I'd ever read it, and I said, you know, I think I have, and here it is. We're always, you know, of the things that we're interested in around here, we're certainly interested in developing people with good golf swings and the ability to score, but we're, in order to do that, you know, you're having to deal with their studentship as well, and teaching them things in golf that they're not, that they're going to use in other areas of their life. So here is a great Zen story about the beginner's mind, and it's entitled Empty Your Cup. It starts, a young man had read all the books he could find about Zen. He heard about a great Zen master and requested an appointment with him to ask for his teachings. When they were seated, the young man proceeded to tell the master everything he had understood from his reading, saying that Zen is about this and Zen is about that, and on and on. After some time, the master suggested that they have tea. He performed the traditional tea ceremony while the student sat at attention, bowing when served, saying nothing. The master began to pour tea into the student's cup. He poured until it was full and kept pouring. The tea ran over the edge of the cup and onto the table. The master kept pouring as the tea ran off the table and onto the floor. Finally, the student couldn't contain himself any longer. He shouted, "Stop, stop pouring. The cup is full. No more will go in." The master stopped pouring and said, "Just like this cup, your mind is full of your own opinions and preconceptions. How can you learn anything unless you first empty your cup?"
Well, there you go.
And he goes on to, the author goes on to say, many golfers have read volumes about the swing. They come to a lesson tee with so many ideas about their swing that they can't hear anything that the pro has to say. They come to the lesson with a full cup. Now, that's certainly true, you know, of adults, that many, many adults who seek lessons, less so of the kids that we teach, but you still see it too, don't you, Jansen?
Absolutely. I experienced that yesterday.
Did you?
You know, the first, had a half hour lesson with an adult, and the first 10 minutes, I just listened to him talk. And sometimes, you know, that's great. I love feedback from my students of if they've been playing or traveling, practicing, you know, I want to hear about those experiences, but sometimes they get a little bit carried away just talking, and I'm ready to start seeing them swing. You know, that's why they came. So,
yeah. Yeah, I had a great student. He wasn't really a great student, but he got an awful lot better. But he came And the first day, he was just he was asking me, "Is this? Should I worry about this? Should I worry about that?" And it was obvious that he had a long history of taking golf instruction. He probably knew almost as many golf lessons as I did, and so he was just kind of running through all of them. And I finally said to him, "You know, like, we're not going to get anywhere if you're going to give the lesson. I mean, you came here. Obviously, yeah. You thought maybe I could help you. Well, I can't possibly help you. You're worried about all these things, and I want you to worry about this, and that's it." And after a while, I mean, it was a little bit of a struggle because he wanted to, his mind wanted to keep jumping. Every time he hit a poor shot, it wanted to keep jumping to one of the lessons that he'd cataloged in his mind. And it was really quite a struggle to get that part of his mind to be quiet and to actually experience what was going on. And ultimately he did. But every time he came in, we would have to go through this dance where he would start telling me everything that he thought he was doing.
Was that kind of the idea of he hits a bad shot and he goes, "Oh, I didn't keep my head down there," right, when actually it was something else.
Right, it was something else entirely. Yeah.
And so to have a more, so you're saying that way of looking at it, his cup was full with all these thoughts and he had an explanation for everything, even though they ended up being the wrong explanation
for it. Exactly right.
And so the way to learn or to grow would be to not, you know, listen to what, you know, the master or the coach or someone else would have to say.
Yes. And a lot of times, you know, everybody who's taught, I think adults over a period of time would say that, you know, first of all, you have to deal with where the student's mind is at. You can't just say, no, shut up. You know, you've come here to listen to me. And so, but you must be able to work with the thoughts they have, disprove to them that that's really the problem, and then begin to, you know, move them in a way that they can start to see and appreciate. Because you can't, as the saying goes, first a servant, then a leader. You know, you must serve their expectation. They've got a voice that's going off. They're just absolutely giving voice to it. You know, some people are just silently sitting back there and you know, judging everything that you're saying and not really, you know, saying, "Oh, I don't believe this," or "I don't believe that," or "I have a serious question about that." You know, it usually takes a while to get to that kind of relationship with somebody. Definitely. So you have to serve them first in order to get them to this beginner's mind, because they just don't, you know, those of us that have been schooled, you know, in our traditional, the way I was schooled is, you go to the teacher and you get answers, and then, you apply the answers or the principles as you've, you know, learned how to do them. And that's what all of us try to do until we become really open. You know, we realize there are many ways of doing things because we end up trying many ways of doing them, whether that's helping, leading somebody to change themselves, or leading ourselves in our own practice to change. You know, we find that whatever we thought our pattern, you know, was, we find that, you know, we can, there are different ways of doing it.
All right. So what else does Dr. Joseph Parent have for us?
The empty cup, as he's describing the perspective of the student, who's given up his preconceptions. He says that the empty cup approach doesn't mean giving up your intelligence and following blindly. The point is to receive everything that's taught in an open way, withholding judgment about it until you've tried it for a while. Try your best to understand what's being communicated, then give it a fair chance to see whether or not it works for you. Sunryu Suzuki Roshi, a great Zen master, said, "In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few." Beginner's mind is a mind that is open, eager to learn, an empty cup. If your mind is open, empty of preconceptions, it is always inquisitive, receptive to whatever arises, and ready to engage. Whether we practice meditation or golf or anything else, at first our experience is fresh and illuminating. When we begin, we have no thoughts of having already accomplished something. Then we can learn. But after a while, it can get stale. We may think we know something and lose our motivation. Our cup starts to fill, and there is less room for something new. When we become aware that this is happening, we can take a fresh start and return to the beginner's mind. That's really what self-awareness is, I think, you know, as you, you know, proceed through golf practice, or, you know, you're receiving instruction, or if you're going through the day and, you know, you're going through meetings with people and stuff, if you get stale in your thinking, you know, all you really need to do is just become aware of it and return, you know, to an open-mindedness and start listening for the possibilities. As somebody said once, if you listen to everyone like you expected them to have a message for you that would change your life, you would listen a lot differently.
Simply being aware of something can help change behavior or change the way that you see the world or see golf or see anything. I think it might have been Dr. Parent or someone else was saying, not in this book, but that they were giving someone like mental game coaching, and this person was just always had a negative thing to say about every single shot, right? They could hit it to 5 feet and it was still a little bit thin or whatever. And so all he told this person to do was to count how many times he said something negative during his round. And the first time he counted, and it was like 70 negative things. And he shot 72. And, you know, so there's a few tap-ins there. So it's finding, you know, a lot of negativity there. But then he said the next time he only had 30 negative things that he said. That he didn't even, it's not like he told him, don't think negative thoughts. It was like, just count. Just be aware of this thing. And somehow being aware. And then each time after that, it went down. Just being aware of something. I think that same thing kind of applies to here, right?
And that's the same thing that Tim Galloway was talking about. When you bring awareness to something, you often don't, you know, have to do anything else. You know, the tension will start to disappear from it. Overthinking or, you know, anxious thoughts. It is interesting, but it does start with that. And it's so often the case that we're on automatic pilot, though, and that our habits of mind, you know, get us into these, I want to say, less than optimal perspectives or states of mind. And then that's what he's talking about, and the author, as we will get into in the four kinds of students.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think our kind of default way of teaching or of learning something is not awareness-based? What? Do you know what I mean? It seems like awareness-based is very effective, but the way we learn everything is just someone saying, you know, do this, do this, do this, do this, and you either do it or you don't do it.
Right. Well, I think what you're saying here is what a lot of, you know, serious educators talking, you know, in the field that encompasses golf, but also everything else, is that we have gone down a path that, in the way we educate people, that's it's pretty rote and does not, you know, have we done a good job since you've been alive with, I know how to add numbers in my head and give change myself. I think if the electronics went out at the supermarket the way that we've educated kids, I think they would have a hell of a problem counting back change. Have we done the right thing in that? You know, I think we've done a lot of wrong things, and a lot of people, you know, have commented. A lot of very creative, productive people, you know, in the history of our country and the world, have said that education, that modern education, is really a necessary, or, you know, something we have to endure, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, make us the best. It doesn't, you know. Where does it emphasize creativity, you know, and real problem solving?
Yeah. It's interesting. It's, well, there's two sides to it, because someone could say, could a 20-year-old read a map, right? I don't know that I would want to go on a journey using a map. I went to Scotland and we used our phones the whole time. So, like, is that a bad thing? Or the other side of it is like, well, they can't read a map because they invented a new way to do it that's better. And I wonder how much it, like, yeah. I'm imagining, like, you can use golf technology or golf instruction of, like, there was once a time where you just had to guess at what the club path was doing or how far that ball went. But now we have exact measurements.
We do. But, you know, it's interesting how it gets used, you know, because, you know, the point of it is to empower you. The point of the technology is to empower you, because it's giving a greater feedback so that you can build your own sensory awareness of what you're doing. But many people don't do that. Many people simply go on it and practice it and rely on it solely to give them feedback, so that the person gets off the thing. And if they're not, you know, able to go into a corner and do some shadow swinging in order to create the swing on their own, you know, and then come back in and be tested by it, well, then they're not really learning it, I don't think. I don't think they're learning it in a way that they can take away from that specific situation. The TrackMan is there, you know, or the flight scope or whatever it is, and it's telling you every single swing. Well,
a lot of people are quickly jumping to, or turning around to look at the screen before they even finish their follow through.
Yeah.
You know,
so where's the recording of the experience?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. They're looking. And, you know, that's what I was listening to Chilton Pierce, who's a child psychologist, and he talked about the fact that the advent of moving from radio to television was a very profound and detrimental to our mind capabilities, because he said, you know, think about it, the experience of listening and visualizing in your own mind the situation, that's what television took away. You know, they gave you the picture. They didn't leave anything for the mind to do. You know, and when technology is used in a way that you're just looking at it, you know, all the time to tell you what your experience just was, rather than you, you know, making a swing and using it to, let's say, test your own awareness, you know, because the point will be that you can walk away and be underneath, you know, the canopy getting ready to tee off on the first tee of the, you know, the Illinois or the U.S. Open, that you know where you are in space, you know? And you didn't have to just get out of the TrackMan station, recharging station.
It's like a drug.
I mean, isn't it? I mean, really. I mean, that's why, you know, it's become, that's why, you know, responsible coaching, you know, doesn't just feed that. And we can see that in, you know, in this cube that we've got. You know, one of the people who, if you moved people around, you know, our facility who really knew how to practice, how many people do you think could use the facility at once? I think that certainly 14 to 16.
Yeah, I would say about 15.
But, you know, if you get one person that thinks that their experience, their practice experience, the value of it is spending, you know, 30, 60, 90 minutes on the TrackMan, well, then you can only get six people in here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not just the utilization of the facility. It's what that means. You know, it's the kind of experience that people are looking for. And I would offer to you that someone who's just using that TrackMan the entire time, and I have to say that I have a student that I do that with, so I indict myself along with this. I'm feeding this with him, and I'm going to stop it. at once, because it's really not, it's really, you know, it's really not the best way to do it. I just, you know, I know it.
Just tell your student that you heard on a podcast that I shouldn't do this. Yeah. He'll listen to it. Like, wasn't that you who said that on the podcast?
Well, it's like what you said earlier. First, you have to serve them before you can have the relationship to be able to to move forward and with an empty cup, quote unquote. So, you know, you're kind of looking now at, like, here's the transitional period of moving forward in the project of whatever that might be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Should we get into the
students?
The cups?
Yeah, the different kind. Here's to continue the analogy. There's a saying, golf can't be taught, it can only be learned. That doesn't mean we can do it without instruction. The point is that no matter how good the instruction is, it's only useful as the student's interest and effort in learning. In describing the learning process, the Buddhist teachings once again made use of the metaphor of the cup. Four types of cups symbolize four kinds of students. Instruction is symbolized by water being poured. The first cup is upside down. This represents a student who's supposedly there to learn but pays no attention. You may have experienced something similar while reading a book. Your eyes move across the words all the way down to the page, but when you get to the bottom, you realize you were daydreaming and you have no idea what you read. That's what happens when the cup is turned upside down. No matter how much is poured, nothing gets in. And, you know, I mean, I think we all go through that, don't we? I mean, if we were perfectly honest, you know, sometimes our mind just does, the Aussies used to say in tennis, my mind was doing a walkabout. Yeah. I think becoming aware from time to time and checking in with yourself and saying, hey, you know, how did I spend those last 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good idea. Oops, I was upside down. I was just daydreaming. People were trying to, you know, get me to engage and I just wouldn't.
And it's maybe okay sometimes.
Sure.
I mean, a little daydreaming never hurt anyone. You're not going to be able to be, you know, alert and engaged every single second of your day.
No, absolutely. I agree.
But I think it's more the tendency can be that how much time are you spending daydreaming and at what times of your day? Is it in the most important times? Is it in the times when you're interacting with other people? Or is it just when you're back in your room by yourself, which, fine.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the second cup is right side up, but it has a hole in the bottom. We hear what's being taught, but we forget it all too soon. We don't chew on it and digest it and take it to heart. For example, we might attend a golf school, and when we get home, be asked by a friend, what did they teach? And we say, well, it was actually, I don't remember. This is the classic case of in one ear and out the other. And, you don't find that perhaps as much with adults, but you definitely find that with kids.
Yeah.
You know, that they're just, whether they can help it or not, whether it's just a part of their brain, you know, being wired, you know, from the time they're zero up until the time they're 15 years old, something is going on, and sometimes they're just unable to hang with it attention-wise.
Yeah, well, I think part of that is that golf practice is different than other kinds of sports practice or, you know, some things in school, where in school it's like learn the formulas, here's the right answer, right? It'll teach you how to do division or multiplication or whatever, and you just have to do that. And you can almost kind of like mindlessly do math to some extent if you're good at it or if it comes naturally. Or in other sports, say basketball, the coach says, you pass it to this person, and then you run to this spot, and then you set a screen. And it's like, can you do that? But golf, whatever aspect of the game you're working on, you almost need to like chew it and digest it, right? It's not just one thing that you just either do or you don't do it. You have to think about it and become aware with your swing and what your body's doing and how that relates to your mind. And it just like takes time to digest. I think that's really the best word I can think of it. And if you don't take the time to digest it, it really is like it's in and out. Maybe you can do it once, but you won't make any lasting change.
Yeah. How old do you think somebody's got to be before they can, you know, take instruction? And I mean, we know that age, you know, specific training, you know, you're going to make the training for, you know, real young kids, 5 to 7, more organized play and not be, you know, so instructing. But still, you know, things like balance, finish balance, and, you know, stuff like that. I've you know, the kids, even those young kids, definitely learn that. And, you know, how to get set up to the ball. I think most of them, if you, you know, have the right visual aids and stuff like that, can develop a routine and at least a routine. They are kind of doing it rote, I think. I'm not sure they...
Yeah.
How old do you think they have to be before they can start?
I want to say 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there.
Oh, really? I guess I was going to say 8.
Well, I was going to say 11. You know, 10, 11, because there's, and maybe it's, and I know a friend of mine, Juan Espejo, you know, really, he likes to start kids, you know, in the 5th grade. Now I find, you know, I think we have a great time here with the junior essentials 1 and 2 kids. And, but it really is, I think, by they've got to be a little bit in adolescence before.
Well, I think you look at our programs and you look at the Travel League kids, and those kids are 10, 11, 12, and some of them can really take some instruction, but a lot of them, it goes right in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah, it's not until you get into kind of the ESP 1 and 2 where they're 14, 15, some of them up to 17, to where they're like really making some solid progress like pretty quickly. So yeah. I don't know. You know, everybody's obviously has their own case and different needs, but
yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily. You know, I guess it depends how you define progress. But I saw you with travel kids doing some of those things where they were, you know, swinging heavy to teach them putting, where they were swinging different things or throwing something back and forth, and you could see some of them were at least taking it and thinking about it, and it was like, oh, that's how this feels. I guess that's kind of the level that I'm thinking of can they take some new concept and really apply it to themselves. And I guess I've seen both of you do it with younger kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I guess I was kind of thinking about, you know, whether these kids could actually self-measure themselves as cups. Let's go on to the third cup.
Okay.
The third cup is right side up and doesn't have a hole in it, but the inside is covered with dirt. When the clear water of instruction is poured in, the dirt makes it cloudy. This symbolizes the way we can distort what we hear, interpreting and editing it to fit into our preconceived ideas or opinions. In this case, nothing new is actually learned. When we take a lesson, if the instruction matches how we already see things, it is taken as confirmation. Anything new that doesn't match our opinion is resisted, ignored, or disregarded.
Deep.
It is. You know, and it's interesting, you know, it's interesting because with adults, you can usually hear it. Usually they're swinging with their words. You know, they're telling you what they believe, what they like, what they don't like. Oh, I don't like that. You know, what don't you like? The hit or the outcome? Or, yeah, I don't, you know, what? No, I don't like this. I don't like doing this because I don't like hitting bad shots, and I'm not willing to hit bad shots. If you've got something to say to me that will instantly produce something good, then I'll listen to you, you know, and I'll usually bring it back to my idea,
right,
and link it to it. Oh, that's because I, you know, did this time. And so those kinds of adult experiences, I don't seek out, you know, when I find people like that around. Yeah. I really try to refer them to someone else.
I mean, so, I like another common one is, well, let me ask you this. I saw this or I heard. What do you think about it?
It's yeah. Like, yeah.
And well, then you do have to try and relate whatever they're giving you. You know, it's like.
Well, on the one hand, you know, if people are, you know, I mean, we are golf guys. And if people, you know, are paying you for to come and use their time the way they want to, I suppose if you're happy, you know, with your fee, then give them what they want. You know, if they simply want your opinion and they want some conversation and they want a little bit different idea, then you're there, you know, to give it to them, and hopefully you'll be satisfied with your fee. But if you're, you know, if your goal as the instructor was to have an impact on your students, then it's not a great experience. But again, you know, if the compensation is worth your time, then do cheerfully and see if you can fill your lesson book with people who you'd rather be with.
Would you say that your perspective towards giving adults instruction is a cloudy bowl?
You're hearing that, aren't you?
Yeah. you said most people come, you know, they have their own preconceived notions about what's about to happen, and so they, and so a lesson doesn't go that well. And so you, in not wanting to work with these people, you have all these things that used to happen to you. And maybe that's not a bad thing, right? Like, you've had real experiences that have given, that you're learning from and you're aware of. Yeah. And so maybe it's not a bad dirty cup, but I don't know, a healthy one to some extent. Do you know what? Because I think we'll talk about this more later, but about, like, you don't have to just say yes to everything or think everything you see out there is a great idea. That's not what a beginner's mind is.
No. No, but it's a mind that's willing to give it a try. You know, and the impatience of, you know, of turning off to, you know, the first awkward outcome, you know, is like, well, you know, this is going to be tough, you know, and knowing as an instructor, you know, how to minimize those experiences is, I think, you know, part of the art. And I think, like, guy like Hank Haney, you know, who will have the student maybe only hit one ball in a half an hour. I mean, he is sculpting with that student, and they're swinging, and that's all about movement education. And I think that, you know, that now that you're, you know, when you take somebody and you really are molding them that way without the distraction of the golf ball and without that stimulating all of their objections, you know, that's probably where, you know, I would take my adult teaching to minimize the times when that would occur. Mm. But, you know, then the student has to feel that they're somehow empowered by the experience that you're having, you know. And so at some point they need to hit a golf ball, unless they're completely bought in to some different kind of a process.
Interesting.
You know, and maybe, and is that maybe how you best serve a beginning student is to, you know, if you realize that they're highly judgmental, is to perhaps to start them golfing in something like, you know, putting strokes and, you know, and have them working as an athlete in the background on a stroke that's got some chance of succeeding before you actually put them into that circumstance.
Yeah. On there's a Tiger Woods documentary that aired on ESPN on Tiger's birthday about his, like, past year. And in it, they had a quote from Earl Woods that I'd never heard before, where he talked about how he taught Tiger the game from green to the tee. And
yeah,
it seems like,
therefore, the name of the original, you know,
was
the
that
academy,
from that
green to tee? It came from
you would have been before Earl Woods or before Tiger.
Because it was where I first learned to learn the game from green to tee was from Bob Toski. Toski back in the I'm going to say the 60s or the early 70s, had published a pamphlet called The Touch System, where he believed that that was the best way to learn the game was closest to the target. So you'd learn that game first, and you'd learn, you know, the manipulation of the club head as an extension of the hands and the arms. And so you'd learn all that stuff, and you'd learn visualization, and you'd learn, you know, a lot of really important things, you know, that then, you know, would really be a true foundation. And so that that made all the sense in the world to me. So that's where we named our the forerunner of the golf practice is Green to Tee. And that was the name of the original academy. And that was the name of, you know, really our core beliefs. And we return to those, I think, now, you know, the way we're constructing, you know, our approach, you know, moves towards that. And in this conversation suggests that, you know, maybe if there was a better game made of learning the dance of the golf swing, you know, like, wow, you've gotten to a point right now where you, I don't know, can, you know, swing beautifully and continuously with that ribbon, you know, all the way to a balanced finish and get through the gates. And, you know, like you'd get points for all of these things, or you'd, you know, you'd have some sort of, you know, creation that you were seeing come to a conclusion, you know, that you were building the airplane before you were going to push it off the cliff.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it sounds great. Even George Gankis, he says he likes giving lessons indoors first because he want, and like just into a net with no TrackMan or anything feedback, because he doesn't want the person to be afraid of hitting it bad. Like, I want you to hit it bad for 10 minutes. And if you're outside or if you have a TrackMan, as soon as you hit a bad ball, this isn't working, or you're not going to be open to it long enough.
They're beautiful. See, there's a way around. There are ways. Those two guys have shown us a way around it, shown me. You guys probably already fully appreciated that. But I have people hit balls tradition because that's what we've always done. Yeah. We've always given golf lessons to people who wanted to hit balls.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're almost starting with one hand time behind the student's back.
Yeah, I think really like the biggest challenge to overcome in this, you know, this dirty cup is like, can you just like reserve judgment for long enough? Can you keep your mind open long enough? And it's really hard to do. I've heard similar teachings about like the difference between it be like a dual mind or a non-dual mind, and that we all grow up with a dual mind where we only know things in relation to another. So like, you only know what tall is because you can compare it to something short. You only know what like black is compared to white, things like that. But then at some point, at some age, you start to say tall is better than short. And so you're making a judgment. And then you use that, you know, that lens for everything else you see in life, that tall is better than short. And so what non-dual or what the beginner's mind is getting at is like, when you see something that's tall or short, can you reserve judgment for long enough to see what this thing actually is, right? Without saying that it's good or bad or better or worse than the other. Because we do it with so many things. You know, if you get on the highway to drive home and there's traffic, is that good or bad? It's bad. It's immediately. You jump to it. If you're going on an airplane and you have to wait a long time, it's bad. You know, all these things are bad, and we don't give them, and we lose days and we lose moments and we lose hours because we just judge these things so quickly and we don't stay open to them, you know, long enough.
And we suffer.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you can see it. You know, I've experienced it in traffic myself recently because I've been able to let it go and, you know, not be impatient to get to my destination or, you know, to release whatever it is that's annoying me about it. You know, I made my wife and I were out in Seattle over the holidays, and we were out in the Olympic Peninsula, and we were coming back, and you either have to drive around the sound, you know, to go down to go through Olympia and down and up through Tacoma and then back up, or you take a ferry. So we had taken the ferry over in the morning, and when we were driving back, the signs on the road said 2-hour wait for the ferry. And I said, I just can't. I compared the experience of sitting to the experience of moving. And I said, I'm opting to spend my 2 hours moving.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I felt better about the experience. And then I started to think about the way I was moving through traffic. And then a lot of times I was really, you know, getting worked up, you know, pissed at drivers and not really being very generous in my own heart about, oh, sure, come on.
Come on
right in here, you know. and I thought, you know, I'm causing myself suffering, you know, with what's going on here, because I'm enduring the drive. I'm not enjoying the drive. And you know, so I've been practicing that. I've been finding that I've been having a much better commute because I've changed my perspective, not because they're getting any shorter.
I've always said that too when I'm driving. If it's stop and go on the highway, I rather take the back roads or the slower roads, even though it'll take the same amount of time or maybe longer, just because I'm still moving. I just want to keep moving. Yeah, you know, I don't care how slow it is, but as long as it's constant, there's something about that. I'm going to sit here. I'd rather, move around a little. Yeah, it's weird.
Well, you know, I'm using the car now as a bit of a gym. You know, like when I'm driving I'm riding, I'm doing different things.
A stallion.
Like, have you ever ridden a horse?
You have like little, are you like doing
pretty
like workouts in the car? You know, I don't know what you're doing.
I'm doing a few shoulder rolls.
Well, be careful, Pete. Yeah.
You know what I like to do sometimes when I drive? We're getting off topic here, but if I have a water bottle in my cup holder, and I like to pretend I'm driving stick.
Nice.
like driving a stick.
I actually have a stick.
So I don't have to. So he doesn't have to.
There's
pretend.
A way around that. You don't have to pretend. You can buy a different car.
Standard car.
All right. Let's hear what the fourth cup.
The fourth cup represents the ideal way to be a student. It is upright, receiving what it is taught. It has no holes, retaining what it is taught. It is clean, open to learning something new. To whatever extent you can, be like the fourth cup. And I think that's a wonderful thing that I find about working here, and that is that, you know, we have interactions about things that we want to do, that we want to try to do, that we are doing. And I think that, you know, when you're striving to get stuff done, you know, you have different opinions of things, and you have judgments, you know, about what people are doing. And it's a great place to keep practicing, you know, for me, the beginner mind, because, you know, I think if you kind of checked in, if I took a diary and checked in with myself every 15 minutes and said, what kind of a cup am I being at the moment?
I think it
would be valuable, you know, I mean, and I think to a certain extent, I think that just becoming aware of it will stimulate that in each of us, you know, to check in with ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like Andy said earlier, about the guy that was counting the negatives, just being aware of it, decrease the negatives.
Yeah.
You know, and if we can be aware of what type of cup we're being, we're most likely going to be a cup that's right side up and taking in that information in a positive way more often.
Absolutely. And, you know, I remember years and years ago, we had a man who came in to do our training, and we were interviewing him, learning what his goals were, learning what his background in sports and learning was. And we asked him to characterize himself, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 as a positive person, and he rated himself very high, around 9. And the very first shot he took in the back room, he turned around and said, "I'm not unhappy with that."
Oh my God.
So, So I thought, wow, that's closer to one than it is to nine. My book.
That is a booby trap right there.
I mean, but he had no idea. And he did. He characterized, you know, what he thought he was characterizing, you know, himself as. In reality, he was unhappy about, you know, most of the attempts he was making and the experiences that he was having. And not being not unhappy mm-hmm. was a fairly, that was about as high as he got.
that's scary.
It wasn't ecstatic. It wasn't delirious. Yeah. I'm delirious over the way I hit that.
Yeah. It's this beginner mind that I just, it's so hard for people to actually do. I mean, if you think, I don't want to make this a political themed podcast, but the country is so split, and because each side only listens to their own side and is never open to anything new. And anything they read is just either it confirms their own ideas or else it explains why the other side is bad.
And yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's all about my, you know, my team, my side, right. Winning or losing. It's all about winning and losing. And you can hear that's the rhetoric. They're not going to let, you know, the Democratic legislators are not going to let Trump win. And yeah. And by the same token, you know, he described. He describes his experiences in the very same way. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, we won. Hey, why did you belittle that person? Well, we won, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think both sides would agree that things aren't in like a great spot now. So that's why stuff like that, I mean, we're talking about golf, but it's more than that, right? Because if more people could get to a place where they have a beginner's mind and see things from another's perspective or are open to new ideas, it could be really important.
Yeah, it could be really important. I mean, we could, you know, we could actually govern ourselves instead of, you know, what we were doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that's.
Well, you did. You've successfully made it a political.
We'll end there before we get too much.
This podcast might go another 3 hours.
Yeah, we could. We could branch off and just do like a separate, like TGP politics. And
we have a bunch of.
No one would ever listen to it. It would be terrible.
This is a good place.
We have no idea what we're talking about. So we'll talk. Now, guys, thanks. It was, you know, not as good as a round of golf would have been, but you know, still a pleasure.
Close.
Here with you.
Thanks. Alex.
Clean contact.
I'd hit it again. Because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment. Or the moment defines you.